Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And I'm Kim Jong Unwell. Get it? I'm unwell. Where's Kim Jong-un? That's what I want. Where is Snuffleupagus?
Brain dead. His sister's running the show. Did you remember how she peeked out? Like when there were all those talks going on with Trump, those idiot talks?
So I think there's a real chance here, but
yeah.
If she's single, I'm available. I'd like to be the first lady of North Korea. So I would buy a lot of shoes and I'd fire rockets off all the fucking time. I'd be like, where's my rocket?
You would be the first. You would be an excellent first lady.
Wouldn't I be the great first lady of North Korea?
You would. Sadly, you would.
I would definitely get the reality TV show I've been looking for.
Imelda Marcos, I think, right? That's where you're going. That's the genre of first ladyhood.
I'd be the salsa to Imelda's chip.
She's still around, I think. I don't think
Imelda?
She's dead. Yes, I think she is.
Yeah.
I believe she's not dead yet.
Have you seen my closet? I think I live with her. I can't get over women's fascinations with shoes. I just don't get it. It's like cocaine. Women and cocaine and women and shoes.
My son. Special relationship. Insane. My son changes his shoes every 15 minutes. His sneaker. He's such
a
sneaker.
Yeah, but that's an investment. That's a real asset.
No. It's the exact same thing. And he has to walk slowly so he doesn't crease them. That's the whole thing.
He has to walk slowly?
Yes. And then he wears the thing inside so it doesn't crease. So literally it's like I'm walking with a woman in high heels or a little old man. He's 10, 20 feet behind me at all times. It's the strangest thing. So they don't crease. Nothing can get on them. Now he's got T-shirts, a Bape T-shirt that you can't get any food on.
Younger one or the older
one? Yes, the younger one. The older one. He could care less. Anyway, let's get into things. So I'm thinking of applying for a PPP loan, Scott.
Well, why not?
I wrote about this saying startups shouldn't do it. And what happened? Axios picked one up. Now, I want to know what you think about this because a couple of media companies did. Most of them were newspapers, local newspapers. But this is Axios, which is a startup funded company, very much, competitor Vox. But Vox did not take PPP loans. What is your thinking? And also your heavy breathing, by the way, today, just so you know.
Oh, am I? It's because we're on video and I can see you, sweetheart.
Stop it. Listen, what do you think about the PPP loan?
Am I heavy breathing? Wait, yes, do I have chest pain? Oh, my God, the virus is finally here.
Listen to me. Don't joke about things like that.
I know.
PPP loans. What do you think about media companies saying, especially startups? I wrote a whole entire column about this. What is your feeling?
Axios is a perfect example. I know a lot of the investors at Axios, and they're civic-minded people who are interested in journalism, and they're also ridiculously fucking rich. And if they weren't taking this money, they would have to dig into their own pockets and fund what is, I think, a great emerging media company. And you know what? They would. So all this is, all PPP in the case of Axios and probably—
This is payroll protection plan.
Yeah, but again, all we're doing, as we do with every large government action, is we're flattening the curve for the rich in this country. Mm-hmm. And there's this cartoon of the single mom who's a cupcake bakery owner. The reality is some of the wealthiest people in America are entrepreneurs and owners of small business. And this is what we're doing. And Barry Ritholtz wrote a great couple articles on the unintended consequences of bailouts. So brief history of bailouts, Lockheed Martin almost went out of business. We came in with $250 million. That probably created the military industrial complex where you didn't have to manage costs. We then went in and bailed out Chrysler. What did that do? It did let, if we hadn't bailed them out, yes, the Japanese would have taken more share, but it probably would have scared the living shit out of the remaining big two, GM and Ford, who probably would have come to a more economically responsible agreement with their unions. They probably would have pivoted to smaller cars faster. We probably would have had less air pollution. And by the way, two of the three went out of business just 20 years later. And then let's go to long-term capital management, where a company managed to turn $5 billion in equity capital, levered up 27-fold, and then almost bring down, you know, they said it almost brought down the global economy. No, it didn't. It almost brought down a bunch of counterparties. If we hadn't bailed their asses out.
Yeah.
Now, what is it? What happens when you bail out a company that levers up 27-fold in financial services? What does that lead to, Kara? Quick.
Bad behavior.
Bad. Exactly. Moral hazard. And what do you know? The subprime crisis. And by the way, who was the biggest counterparty that got bailed out?
Banks.
The bailout of long-term capital management? Bear Stearns, who just went bankrupt with leverage in 2008.
But listen, we're talking about these startup companies. Again, I wrote a piece about saying startup companies shouldn't take this money. And Axios is a startup company, just like Vox. And taking this money, they do have investors. Even if they have to get crammed down, they should be focused on their investors. It's quite controversial. I don't know about regular small newspapers, because they don't have, like, a lot of these companies that are supposed to get this money don't have VC investors with piles of money. And I'm okay with small newspapers or local newspapers getting it, but startups.
They should go out of business, Kara.
The
reason why America hires people faster than any nation in the world is because we can fire them faster. And we're creating, this is what we're doing. We're creating one of the strongest entities in the world, and that's U.S. small business. And we're taking them from red tail pit mixes. By the way, the red tail pit is a vastly underrated dog. Very friendly, good dog.
All right, we're turning
small businesses into a bunch of bitch-ass poodles who mommy government knits sweaters for.
Oh, my God.
Are ultimately going to go out of business anyways. Here's what you need to do.
All right, quickly, because we got to get to the big story. Go ahead.
We need small businesses that are soldiers, not brittle. And when you tell them they can't fire them, those people are going to be fired anyways, or most of them are, because these companies aren't in fighting shape. And the majority of people benefiting from, again, this flattening of the curve of rich people in the form of a $600 billion bailout are wealthy investors and owners of small businesses. Yes, $100 billion of this will make it to the right people. The other $500 billion, do you realize the size of this? $600
yes.
billion? Dollars?
Yeah, they
Here's
just approved.
Here's an idea, Kara. Here's what? An idea. Let's take half of U.S. households, the bottom median. That's 50 million households. Let's give them each $12,000, because it's not protection these companies need. These small businesses need
business.
Demand. They
demand.
Need business. Yeah. So let's business. Put $12,000. $12,000 tax-free is like 9 or 11 months at the lower median's household income. That would be incredible.
I
stimulus.
Would agree. Hello. You are so Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez these days. I don't know what to say. Let me just say, this is the kind of thing she's talking about.
Protect people, not jobs.
Yes, exactly. Now, listen, the Senate just approved $484 billion more.
Oh, my God.
The question is whether it's going to get to the right places. And that's, you're right. I think you're right. And I think, you know, Axios made its argument, but they have an availability of access. And if the investors don't believe in them, that's the way it goes. Same thing if it was Vox, same thing if anything like that. It's a tough world out there. I agree with you on that. But I do think, like, delis and stuff like that don't have, like, that are good businesses do need just a tiny little bit of a break.
This is the psychology everyone goes through. I'm a small business owner, and I do empathize with them. I mean, like, it's helicopter money. It's free money. Yeah, if I don't take it, my other competitors go out ahead of me. So I have my CFO look into it. $250,000, file, get it in 48 hours. That is very tempting. And then I recognize, okay, as indignant as I am, do I really want to be the guy taking government money? And also, at the end of the day, all of my investors are really successful, wealthy people.
They could give you money.
If we get in trouble, we decide, all right, we all lose money and we go on to do our next thing. Or they decide to reach into their pockets and put more money in. And trust me, these guys have those pockets, and so do most of these businesses. What just happened with Shake Shack and Axios, you know, unfortunately, they're quite frankly, they're the poster children for this. Times that by 10,000.
Yes.
A hedge fund with eight people that's investing in distressed credit, and the guy is worth $500 million. You're going to find out that he got PPP.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You are going to see so
free ice cream, Scott. I'm going to move us along. Speaking of,
sorry,
that's all right. I like your rant.
Do Alexander. Not move along, Kim Jong Un's sister.
Listen to me, Alexandria Ocasio Cortez,
First Lady of North Korea.
While we are in lockdown, Netflix has had the best quarter in its history, which is probably no surprise. Yeah. In an earnings report on Tuesday, they said Netflix now has 183 million customers around the world. Back in January, before the Western world was quarantined, Netflix said it expected to add 7 million new subscribers in the first 3 months of 2020. It actually added about 16 million. That's more than double. Disney isn't reporting earnings until the beginning of May, but Disney did announce earlier this month it had more than 50 million subscribers for the streaming platform Disney Plus in just 5 months after its launch. HBO Max from Time Warner is set to launch in May. What Netflix acknowledged that the pace of the growth was short-lived and said they expect membership growth to decelerate as home confinement ends, which we hope is soon. So, Scott, and by the way, Reed Hastings is hysterical in his bedroom and actually has been responding to people about broadcasting from this weird bedroom he has. So, Scott, how do you manage this momentum while it lasts, while they have it? What would you do? And they also created, just so you know, a $100 million fund to help producers, crews, and filmmakers cope. It extended beyond the U.S., giving away money to film-related organizations in Britain, Italy, Brazil, Mexico, and the Netherlands. What does this list tell you about their global partnerships and reliance on the global creator system? And what does it mean in the competitive landscape? I got to say, Reed Hastings is flawless, as far as I can tell, in everything.
Incredible.
So, including his weird little bedroom. So tell me what you think of this, and what do you think is going to happen?
Well, it's not surprising, right? But it's okay. So Netflix, I believe, is up 28% year to date. So they're obviously accelerating through the crisis. It's what do they do? This is a company now worth more than Disney. What they do is they either buy Spotify or they start making these massive, super interesting investments, as they did in Madrid, where they have hired 10,000 creatives and they're creating content that can be morphed into German and Norwegian and Ukrainian content really easily. They just slip in into the same sets with the same scripts, different, you know, the hot star from Kiev, and they make a Ukrainian version. They're the only company other than Amazon.
Yeah, they're the Amazon of entertainment. That's what I was 100% just thinking.
Because by virtue of the fact that they're, as long as they manage that incredible story they have in concert with this, that's the peanut butter, the chocolate is access to the cheapest capital in the history of entertainment. And they can keep making these forward-leaning investments. And then the wind of Corona will eventually subside and people will hopefully be spending less time in their homes, but they're still going to spend more time in their homes than they did pre-Corona. And you have one company that is just going out and absolutely making such incredible investments. And they're making, if you're making triple the CapEx of anybody else, and you're just as good or better, which Netflix is, you kind of can't compete. So
yeah, they're really good.
I've been watching mostly
Netflix stuff, I have to say.
What have you been watching?
Just whatever. I watched like a dumb Diane Keaton movie on it the other night. Even their dumb movies.
But
like
even their AI. So for example,
It's just good. It made me go to it. I don't know why, and I ended up watching two movies in a row.
It's becoming the home screen for your TV. But if I go to the home screen of Apple TV Plus or Disney Plus, and then you do, we see the same thing. Whereas our Netflix screens are entirely different. They have figured out a way to incorporate some sort of AI or personal recommendation engine that is just superior, that again, leverages a better investment. And by the way, that investment is bigger. So it's a rum floater chaser on a much bigger Mai Tai.
Yep. I found one that they had funded, this amazing movie they funded about a kid it was called Troop Zero. And Allison Janney was in it. I love Allison Janney. And
watched last night?
It was great. What?
I watched Call Me By My Name.
Oh, that's great. You watched that, the peach scene. Oh.
Yeah. Wow.
And?
Those guys are hot. You know, emerging, budding gay love, you know, trying to add some complexity to the dog. Look, that movie, basically, I thought it was boring. But
gay people
for the sex
loved
scenes.
Gay men loved it. It's really
well,
good.
You know what it was?
I know a lot
it was
of
a beautiful movie.
It
was like Tom Ford exploded into a movie. And it makes him want to move to Europe. It's basically, it should have been financed by the European tourist.
I literally thought the last scene where he's crying and talking on the phone and the guy can't be gay was so powerful. They're
very
making
powerful.
Another one, apparently, because there was a book. There was a follow-on book. It would be great if they did.
And
Timothy Chalamet.
That guy's a tall drink of lemonade. Oh my
gosh. Which one? The aren't the guy who was the hot one.
I'm not going to speak.
They're both hot. What are you talking? Timothy Chalamet is the young one.
Young? You can't talk that's about young Timi- people.
No, he's not actually young. Timothy Chalamet is the dark haired guy. And tell me, Oracle.
When you have stock, North Korea. I don't want to say that it's inflated, but when you have stock that is what I'll call massively fully valued, and now Netflix is worth more than Disney, you take this opportunity to make acquisitions. I think I like Spotify because Spotify on its own
I don't think they'll survive.
You might be right. Or they're going to make some crazy investments in international production because that's kind of the only place where people don't have Netflix is in Asia and Europe. But you're right. Reed Hastings is probably, he's kind of I don't want to call him unsung hero, but everybody talks about the genius of Bezos and Gates and Zuckerberg. People will look back and when they look at the environment and probably the world's greatest pivot in the history of business. I mean, they were mailing out DVDs. Yeah.
He was amazing. I think I did tell you this. I interviewed him at Sundance. Nobody would pay attention to him. Nobody would come. And I was like, this guy's got onto something. He's so calm. He's an adult. I really enjoy talking to him because he's such an adult. And even though they have that weird culty thing and everything, like he really did understand. He just has an iron stomach to change things and everything.
Well, he's not that interesting. He doesn't take dick pics and he doesn't let Russia weaponize the platform.
Yeah,
so we're
and he left the board of Facebook. Speaking of which, getting into Facebook,
anyone else with any integrity? But anyways,
I think he should say something about it. But I'm pretty certain he had it. This week, Facebook made its largest single investment in a company because it can't buy anything in the United States. It bought something called Jio, which is a big deal. It's in India. The $5.7 billion investment would give Facebook a 9.99% stake in Jio Platforms. Yeah. Jio Platforms is a major carrier of internet and cellular services in India. It is a big deal in India. It's a huge company in India. More than 388 million people in India have been connected to the internet over the past 4 years through Jio. India has the largest market for Facebook. I think it's a large market for Facebook. It's not the largest, but it's one of the largest in the world. More than 400 million people in the country use WhatsApp. The investment still requires approval from the competition regulators. It isn't Facebook's first attempt to break into the India market. Several years ago, it tried to offer free internet to Indian users in a program called Free Basics, a little controversial. Ultimately, regulators decided that companies cannot offer free internet services. It favored some companies over others. And a reminder, in January, Jeff Bezos made announcements about branching out into India. He pledged to invest an additional $1 billion in the country to digitize the businesses and spoke of exporting $10 billion of Indian goods by 2025 through Amazon. So as part of the announcement, Zuckerberg posted in the blog, with communities around the world in lockdown, many of these entrepreneurs need digital tools they can rely on to find and communicate with customers and grow their businesses. I don't know what he was saying there, but India, this is where they can expand. That's my guess, because they're going to have a hard time buying anything in the United States.
Yeah, it just goes to, there's something to be said of the notion of where you really make a lot of progress professionally or from a business, and granted, you have to be in a position to do that, is to play offense while everyone's playing defense. So the majority of companies are drawing up plans to furlough employees or cutting costs. And meanwhile, Facebook's like, all right, we absolutely aren't going to be on our heels. Let's go on our toes. And they're off doing what must have been a very complicated deal with, you know, hundreds of thousands of high-priced lawyers in conference rooms to figure out a way to buy 9.99% such that they didn't trigger Indian regulatory laws. Yeah. But largest sell, the guy who owns it is the wealthiest man in India. And I mean, he is not afraid. He has levered up dramatically, basically driven down sell costs and put some of the biggest players, including Vodafone, on the brink of bankruptcy. And this is really interesting because what this appears to be like, and I'm curious if you agree, I couldn't figure out why they were doing this, to take a minority stake in a company. And what this looks like it is basically a multi-billion dollar investment in an attempt to monetize the 600 million WhatsApp users in India.
Yeah.
And that
That's
is,
what I think. Yeah.
There's something called JioMart that is exceptionally popular among Indian small businesses. And the thinking is, all right, let's take the small businesses and connectivity of small businesses, let's put them on WhatsApp, and let's try and turn WhatsApp into an e-commerce platform on top of a 600 million strong user base, and then maybe import those learnings to the rest of the world and turn WhatsApp into what is probably could be the next Instagram, and that is drives the real value at Facebook. So I think this is essentially an investment in WhatsApp, or the monetization strategy of WhatsApp, which so far has been incredible from a user standpoint, but not from a monetization standpoint. And it also pretends or portends an incredible increased investment in India. India is about to become, I don't want to say it will be the next China, but it'll be the next China in terms of capital allocation, because between coronavirus and diversifying your supply chain, everyone's looking to the nearest instead of the farthest.
And India, you know, they sort of run up against a wall in China in terms of investing the next big market. But India is somewhat open, although much more controlled and by the government, so, you know, and of course, under Modi, it's almost like he's sort of a fascist, essentially. And very controlling. Sorry, but he's very controlling of the media. He's disturbingly controlling of the media and doing all kinds of nefarious things.
It sounds more palatable when you say una fascista.
Fascista. Anyway, the stuff he's doing around the media is quite disturbing. So it's interesting that this is where they can go to grow. Now, Uber, you know, was there. It competes with Ola. It's a market that's enormous and full of promise. They've got to grow somewhere. That's what I think. They kind of, and their first attempt was kind of ham-handed with the Free Basics. And then if you remember, Mark Andreessen made that kind of ridiculous remark about India at the time. But I think this is the way to get in, like the way Yahoo got in long ago, got into China through Alibaba. They try to go in straight ahead and it's very difficult. Yeah. And Uber struggled there, even though it's done better than people thought. I think it's still struggling. And of course, that's where they have a lot of their biggest controversies previously. But, I think this has got to be markets that they've got to get into in a big way. They cannot buy anything here. Neither Amazon nor Facebook can possibly buy a company here. I mean, when you were talking about Netflix buying Spotify, obviously Amazon would be a contender for Spotify.
They can. Amazon can't. Amazon can. Netflix could probably get away with it before raising antitrust scrutiny. But let's do what I always do. Let's turn this story back to me.
Okay.
So
all right. My
favorite topic. In the early aughts, I went on the board of Gateway Computer after raising money and buying 17% of the company.
You were on the board of Gateway Computer.
Talk about
that guy. What was that guy's name?
Talk about the weakest flex in the world, right? I was on the board of Gateway.
Ted Wait. Yeah. Oh, he was
actually
funny.
A visionary guy. Brought a ton of jobs to South Dakota.
Yeah, in a way.
Anyways,
of a type.
In a way. So, but 30 years ago, if you read a research or an analyst report on computer hardware, there was a real controversy. Half the analysts would have said the Gateway was going to win, and half would have said that Dell was going to win. And we know how that turned out. Anyways, if you had talked to geopolitical analysts, the Ian Bremmers of the world, 30 or 40 years ago, they would have said it's a horse race between India and China for the next major superpower. Because we like to think, of course, that our unique system is the way to go, that there were more English speakers in India, there were more PhDs in India than anywhere in the world, and it's a democracy, so we said, okay, of course, India has to win. And it hasn't, but I wonder if India is about to command the space it occupies. This could be, because when you think about all the capital that was going into China, and then you think about the corruption, you think about Corona, you think about the fact that everyone's trying to diversify their supply chain, because look what happens when 90% of your tops are knit in Shenzhen or wherever. Mm-hmm. And everyone's going to turn, I think, to India. And you also have what is the key asset of any economic growth is you have a lot of young people. And so it's going to be, India is finally probably about to get their due, which, my prediction is around India, and we'll come back to that. But it's to think about this, 30 years ago, India, China, it was a coin flip over who was going to be the next major superpower.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's an interesting country. Have you been there much? I used to travel there quite a bit. I haven't been there.
I've never been to India. My closest friends, and this is technically a racist comment, my closest friends at Stern
are... please make it then.
My closest friends at Stern are Indian. I love Indians.
I can't believe you've never been there as someone who talks about
media. I'm intimidated by it. And you know what? I'm intimidated by my perception of the incredible poverty and also of
it's certainly there.
I worry about getting sick, which makes me a total
wimp. Also there too.
But India's the largest country I've never been to.
You can get sick here in this country now.
Oh,
yes, many times.
Do you like it?
I do. It's a difficult country. It's a really interesting mix of totally modern and totally antiquated, and also the poverty is I haven't been there in about a year, year and a half, but you know, it's really something to see. It's also beautiful and life in all its forms. I don't know how else to put it. And what's interesting is the modernity mixed with the lack of modernity. And so you'll be watching a TV, and you'll have, India, MTV India, and it's all like modern and you know, everything's modern, all the cell phone, all this stuff. And then you'll look up and then there'll be a telephone pole full of like wires in this way that's just sort of insane the way that it, anyway, it's a wonderful country. And there's a lot of, you know, obviously innovators. And I think that what's interesting is whether what Facebook
compelling.
Is up to.
I'm more likely to go to India. Just go.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful country. You would like it a lot. Okay. But what's interesting is why Facebook is doing this way. I think they just need to sort of get in there and grow. I don't see it's, you know, in terms of having a purchase, they need a purchase. And this is obviously an innovative company so that it's a better one than the big players. There's a lot of very entrenched players in India, you know, in terms of the companies.
Yeah, but I think what the media is missing here, the media sees an investment in India, and it is what I see it as is an investment in a monetization strategy for WhatsApp. And
okay.
We'll see.
All right. All right. Well, it's an interesting purchase, and it will be interesting to see what other U.S. companies do there. And
let's
then
do pivot from India. And by the way, let's absolutely take that Army Hammer guy. I would like to roll with him in a box full of peaches. What do you think?
He's a good actor. He's hot.
He was in that terrible movie with Leo DiCaprio about Edgar Hoover, where they had the worst.
Oh yeah, he was his boyfriend. He played his boyfriend. Listen to me. He's also the Hammer family. That's the Hammer family. He's really wealthy too. He's from that family.
That's how you go into entertainment. Is you have a rich dad.
Well, he's very wealthy. He's really very talented.
That guy's very good. He was fantastic in Facebook. He convinced me he was one of two people.
Okay.
That guy.
He's a very good actor. Anyway, calm down about your new gay awakening, Jesus. Scott. All right, Scott, let's go to a quick break and come back to talk about Jeff Bezos taking the wheel at Amazon and a listener mail question.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Okay, Scott, we're back. Listen, Jeff Bezos is back at the helm of Amazon amid the COVID-19 outbreak. It was a great story in the New York Times chronicling that. Bezos has stepped away from day-to-day operations at Amazon. He was doing sort of the big stuff. He was flying around the world and doing Instagramming with his new girlfriend. He was working on long-term projects like Blue Origin or different things that Amazon was doing. You know, that's what happens. He sort of kicked himself upstairs. In a letter to shareholders, he said, "For now, my own time and thinking continues to be focused on COVID-19 and now how Amazon can help when we're in the middle of it." He also discusses safety measures the company has taken for its Whole Foods workers and says the next step for the company will be testing for COVID-19. Bezos also said the World Health Organization is using Amazon Web Services to organize its data. And earlier this month, Bezos made his first public appearance at an Amazon warehouse, the first one in years, and he posted a video of it to Instagram. So he's this story was about how he's engaging day-to-day, every day of the week now, on everything from delivering services to worker safety to perception to PR. He's back. He's from his, it looks like he's in Texas. He has a big ranch there. And he's been involved now very deeply. So what do you think about this day-to-day return, which he had given off to a lot of his executives who've been with him forever, so they know how he thinks. So what is the optics of this? What are the internal politics? Is it that the executives can't do the job that they need him there? Or is it just this is just a natural crisis and it's really important for Amazon, which its stock is, you know, to the moon right now. So we've talked about this and the issues around the workforce, and you've predicted Amazon becomes a $2 trillion company in the next couple of years. Bezos ended the shareholder letter with a section calling leveraging scale for good. We can talk about that. So your thoughts on this, on Bezos' back at the helm?
It's you know, it's kind of the basis of good leadership. And in crisis management, you know, you say there's only three things you have to remember. You have to address the issue, you have to overcorrect, and the top guy or gal has to be front and center. And this is a form of crisis management. And that is when shit gets real or you're in the midst of a crisis, you have to get very involved and put all your plans on hold. And he's done that. And he's very present. He's making decisions. You know, he's a great leader. I think he's going to be probably go down as, you know, he's the Jack Welch of our generation. A lot of people have decided that Chainsaw Jack and the total focus obsession with shareholder value wasn't a good idea. And Jack Welch kind of set up a kind of a hollow foundation for mm-hmm. General Electric. This guy, Bezos will probably, if he had to vote now, who in 50 years will be seen as the most dominant business figure of this century, it'll be Bezos. And this is just basic kind of leadership 101. When you're in a situation of this magnitude and this importance, you show up, you put everything aside. And he's done
that. Stop buying houses in Hollywood. Stop taking weird pictures.
That's right. And so it's not, I don't think it's that complex or nuanced a view. It's just that when this is an opportunity when things, and I think it's an opportunity for every entrepreneur when you're in a small business to be really present in the business, really visible, call everybody, check in on everybody, and just be all over everything all the time. And that's not to say that you push your lieutenants aside. My sense is he has an unbelievable bench.
They've been with him for, one of them was like I think the guy who runs, Andy Jassy runs AWS, was like a teenager. I'm recalling he was very young and he was sort of, they were all assistants, like Russ Grandinetti worked for Mary Meeker. There was a bunch of people there that have been there forever. It's a really interesting group of people. Actually Reed Hastings had a very similar thing where people had been with him for a very long time. He has not left the helm, of course. He runs that place. Pretty much, he's still very much in charge there. And Bezos had given it off to people like Jeff Wilke. Yeah. What do you think his big issues are? Obviously, the safety of workers has been there negative than the safety of workers. And one of the things they were telling you about is testing everybody all the time. And of course, that brings to mind, a lot of people are telling me these companies are just going to start buying tests themselves and test people constantly and take the role that government should play in this. I think that's his most glaring problem is these worker problems have always been Amazon's Achilles heel of how it treats workers and how it and it's tried in various ways to pay them more and do the thing, but there's always this sense that they gobble up people and are not thinking of their people the most. So I think this is one of their biggest problems. And during a pandemic, it's a way to prove that perhaps you are better than people think you are. And the second one is this idea that they're so big, we can't live without them. And that's a negative on ends. Like, so.
Yeah, you said, so first off, and this goes into a shareholder letter. And a shareholder letter versus all the previous shareholder letters where it was playing offense and striking a vision, this shareholder letter was, look how important we are. Look how nice we are. Look how good we are. Don't break us up. This was the most disappointing shareholder letter that he's ever put out. And because they're now, you say, what are their issues? It's actually not Amazon's issues. It's our issues because Amazon is marching towards $2 trillion. Unfortunately, they and Walmart have now become too big to fail. The scariest thing that could happen right now is if there were massive outbreaks or just a Cesar Chavez organized Amazon and Walmart warehouse workers. And they said, you know what, America, for the next 72 hours, we're going to shut down your food chain. I mean, You want to see people start to like riot at the Publix and the Kroger's. If Walmart and Amazon have become too big to fail, which is really scary. And the other scary thing, and we're seeing it with Mayor Bloomberg, is, and it's wonderful that he's doing this, but Mayor Bloomberg is now swooping in to save New York and provide contact tracing. And while I applaud him for putting his money to civic use, and the fact that government now needs to rely on rich people to step in and do our testing and tracing,
it's ridiculous.
Isn't okay, in the short run, for about a day, we should applaud those wealthy people.
Yep.
But then we have to spend time on thinking, okay, how do we get back to a state where our government and our fire department can put out fires instead of asking the rich guy down the neighborhood to grab his kids and bring their really nice hose over? We just can't. It's embarrassing that Governor Cuomo has to put out a press release thanking the Michael Bloomberg
for kindness of billionaires. The kindness of billionaires.
Yeah, Pablo Escobar built soccer stadiums, but that meant that didn't mean that the society was working.
All right. So, but Bezos here, what do you imagine? Do you think he'll stay engaged or he'll just swoop in, fix this, and then he will have to deal with these? Amazon is too big. I think that is not going away. I think Trump, of course, has tried to attack him and unsuccessfully. You know, he's done a very deft job of staying away from Trump. And in fact, he participated in a recent thing that Trump brought together, one of those business circuses that he put together. But what does he do? What does he do now? Like, everyone's sort of in debt to Amazon for delivering perfectly. What does he do now? Because no matter how you slice it, even if he's good, he's too big.
Yeah, look, I've been thinking a lot about what you could do with that $600 billion, that 400 of it is going to waste and will be the biggest scandal of COVID-19, in my view, in addition to the incompetence of our federal government that has had more time to prepare and yet has managed to figure out a way to have more death and more infection than Spain, Italy, the UK, and China combined. So that will be the biggest controversy, is that, as Stalin said, one death is a tragedy, millions of deaths are a statistic. And because the president has committed such gross incompetence on such a massive level, it's now a statistic instead of involuntary manslaughter. But anyways, having said that, the $600 billion, what could you do with that? So, for example, why wouldn't we? There's supposed to be 4 million kids showing up for college in the fall, another 10 to 12 million, some form of education in terms of junior college, a bunch more that would like some form of training. Why wouldn't we have a Corona Corps? And that is take $10 billion, maybe 15, and have the world's most adroit technologically or technically capable tracing army. And make sure that this thing doesn't come back.
Wait, what does this have to do with Amazon? It's a great idea.
Well, because effectively you can't have, when corporate, a key step to tyranny was when companies, private power becomes the government. And if they're in charge of testing and tracing, then they're too big to fail. Then they get to make decisions. Then they ultimately get control.
And delivery, food delivery.
They get control of the economy. Then they say, I know, I'll buy the Washington Post. And once you get control of the economy and the media, you typically end up taking control of the military. And the people running German industry didn't wake up in the morning and go, we're going to be evil. But it led to a very evil place. And this is very scary. And one of the things—
I don't feel like Bezos is going to be running the military, Scott.
Pretty soon, $10 billion Jedi CIA contract.
No, fair point.
That's
fair point.
One
but he didn't
step.
Get it. He didn't get it. That's in the middle.
It's been politicized.
But a
crisis is a terrible thing to waste. And what the most forward-looking investments we could make are, one, to break up. And I was talking about investments. So the Corona Corps, one investment. You know what would be the best return on investment we could make right now?
What
is if we tripled the budgets of the DOJ and the FTC?
Yes, agreed. You know that. I'm a damn, but I think that's done. I think that's done. I may have.
You
to
think it's over? You think it's
I
done?
Do,
is it going to happen, or it's too late?
It's too late. They're not going to get to it. They're exhausted, these legislators, and they're not going to get to it. This is the last thing on there. It's moved down from number 2 or 1 to number 12 or whatever. All right, we're going to get some. You're right. But I don't think Jeff Bezos is going to take it for the military anytime soon. But maybe. Okay, Scott.
But by the way, one last thing. I'm sorry. We always forget. We talk about this stuff through the lens of politics and business. We forget these people are humans. Jeff Bezos is going through the mother of all midlife crises. And I went through a midlife crisis, and you know what, Kara? I thought it was going to involve extraordinary experiences, sex with random beautiful women, and an adventure, enjoying the world. And you know what?
What?
I was right. They're awesome. They're awesome. And if I was Jeff Bezos, I would continue. He's going to show up for his photo.
He's not like this.
He's going to get a bunch
of press. Romantic.
And then he's going to go back to his wonderful midlife crisis.
No, you know what? It's not. It's a different kind of midlife crisis. Midlife crisis. He's a romantic. Anyway, I don't want to talk about his sex life right now. Okay, let's hear
Where's the phone? Where's the camera?
Let's hear from a listener.
Okay.
You got. I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman.
You got mail.
Hey, Carol and Scott, this is Shabani from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm a big fan of the show and listen every week, and my question today is about COVID-19 recovery. It looks like masks are going to be an essential part of the recovery process. Asian cultures have been wearing them for a while now, but they're a relatively new phenomenon here in the U.S. How do you think they'll be received here? Do you think they're going to be utilitarian or high fashion? Is PPE a viable product line for mass apparel and fast fashion brands? And if so, which ones do you think will embrace it first? Thanks so much.
Well, this is a good question because I have teens and they're discussing this. My son wanted me to buy a $50, I don't know, Bape one or Supreme one, and I declined. And my other son has a fashion one. I bought them plain white ones, and this is not going to thing. And they want to wear these masks. It's interesting. Last week, Vogue posted a story touting masks to shop now. There's a new subscription company called themaskclub.com with licensing deals with Hello Kitty, NASA, and Batman, among others. Masks like are a thing. I have to tell you, the teens they will not wear the masks I bought them. They have to have. I think anyone should get any mask. So I think the whole thing is ridiculous. But what do you think about this? Is it a business? Will Americans and others wear them all the time the way they do in Asian countries?
Well, as a species, we don't have claws. We're not that strong. We're not that fast. So a tremendous amount of our frontal lobe and cortex is focused on examining our surroundings to make sure something's not about to eat us. Because if something gets near us, we're probably doomed. So we constantly look at other animals' eyes and other people's eyes because someone's not going to shoot you or attack you typically if they're not looking at you. So we spend just so much time focusing on other people's eyes and specifically their faces. And as a result, the face is just an enormous industry. I mean, according to Il Makiage, it's a $500 billion plus industry, right? So Estee Lauder, right. L'Oreal, think about how much money and how much time, especially women, spend on their face relative to the rest of their corpus, right? So if you think about the next kind of big signaling or wearable, it's going to be face masks. And you're going to see LVMH, you're going to see every fashion company offer some sort of signaling. You're going to have masks that say, okay, I'm cool, I'm edgy. Because when you cover your face, all you really see is eyes. The complexity and nuance of a person goes way down because we like to make
smiling.
Well, and also the reason why we
got transparent masks. Why don't we make transparent?
Well, that's an interesting idea because it would probably steam up and just look very strange. But supposedly we're drawn to people with symmetry in their face and high cheekbones because supposedly those people are less prone to infection, et cetera, et cetera. And people with a prominent Adam's apple, it means they're male and strong.
How do you get a mask? I'm much more attractive in a mask. I have to say, I'm like
mask works for the dog, as does the dark.
I look kind of no. I'm not saying the dark. I think I look better in a mask.
Face or podcast?
No, it's not that I'm ugly necessarily. It's just that the masks work well on me. It's interesting, and especially with the glasses, with the sunglasses.
I look like the worst.
I
look like the worst, like extra on Mad Max. I just look.
But this idea of them being fashion forward, I just think is awful. But
says the person wearing Ray-Bans during a podcast.
Listen to me. I have the same shoes since college, so don't even speak to me about fashion. But do you think it's an actual business or just it'll be a necessity? Anything big?
Though some companies will emerge that interesting subscription ideas. But what you're going to see is you're going to see everyone from Prada to Old Navy. To really cool. Supreme's a great example. People are going to pay a lot of money.
I'm not buying that mask.
A lot of money for a Supreme mask. It's going to be a new form of self-expressive benefit branding, as your Apple
Watch. But I
want
them to wear a mask. I'm sort of torn. Like, I want to wear a mask, but I'm not buying that mask.
I'll be curious if people. So we're renovating our house down here in Florida, and it feels like in just the last 48 hours, everyone's gone from wearing a mask to not wearing a mask, and we're trying.
Everyone's wearing them here in D.C.
Yeah, it's.
I feel badly when I don't have it on. I have it on all the time, and I sometimes take it off when there's no one around. But I can see, I agree. There was someone counting masks in San Francisco. Francisco, and only about 10% of people had them on when they were relatively close to each other. I don't wear it when I'm not near people, but I immediately have it ready to put on. And in stores here, it's a requirement. And, you know, I've had some workers that own a house that nobody lives in, and they all have to wear masks and gloves. And so, and they all do, they all arrive like that, which is interesting. I think it's a good trend in general. And I think I'm going to keep wearing masks after this. I'm an advanced person. I'm an advanced age person. I'm going to keep wearing masks.
All right.
Also, I look good. All right. Anyway, we're going to take a break. Thank you so much for your, I hope Cleveland's Shobani doing okay. Cleveland. Thank you. Your governor is pretty okay, even though I'm not in the
GOP. DeWine.
DeWine is pretty decent. He seems like good a sensible man. Fella, unlike the mayor of Las Vegas. Anyway.
Oh,
all
my
right.
God. Can you believe?
We'll talk about that in a minute. We'll talk about that in a minute. She's insane. She's insane. And Anderson Cooper, like, literally did the best job of interviewing. I have to give kudos to him for that. All right, Scott, we're going to take one more quick break. We'll be back for predictions. I predict she's not going to be mayor of Las Vegas for too much longer.
Hey, everyone. This is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the streaming wars. And there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
Okay, Scott, before we get into your prediction for the week, did you see that the University of Chicago did a study tracking COVID-19 related deaths in relation to Fox News viewership? Did you see that?
Yeah, but that's correlation, not causation.
Well, we'll see. No, they were doing it. They researched COVID-19 cases.
Well, it's true. We said this, that listening. So the question there is, is listening to Hannity lower your fear resulting in reckless behavior that increases the likelihood of catching the virus? Or is it the fact that the people watch Fox tend to be older, have more comorbidities, live in regions that they're not taking distancing as seriously?
Well, no, they compared Tucker Carlson watchers and John Hannity watchers.
Okay.
Yes, so this is. So they watched Tucker Carlson, who comparatively came out with warnings, against coronavirus very early and very firmly, and saying this is a really important thing you have to pay attention
really
to and not go out. And Sean
That's
Hannity,
really
and the study found that greater exposure to Hannity relative to Tucker Carlson tonight leads to greater number of COVID-19 cases and deaths. It has not been, I will make clear, it's not been peer reviewed yet, but it's from a lot of economists I talked to telling me it's a very good study, and it's interesting. So they had a control group, speaking of Las Vegas. And so it's interesting. So I just want to say, anecdotally, I was correct with my mom. And I'm thinking of writing a sequel, because it is impossible to get your mother out of a foxhole. She literally was parroting some stuff about opening the country, and I wanted to go down to Florida and just bring her back here, because it was disturbing. Anyway, okay, Scott, time to get out of here, but I would like some predictions before we go.
My predictions we've talked about. I think that PPP is going to end up being one of the real scandals of this. I think it's absolutely. The amount of, I won't call it fraud, because the people aren't lying here because they don't need to lie, but the amount of waste, the number of the amount of capital. I mean, money is just a transfer of work and time from other people to someone else. And when we run up our deficit by $600 billion to flatten the curve of rich people, of which there are more wealthy people from small businesses in America than any other sector or cohort. And all of this money, or not all of it, 60 to 80% of it, we're going to find out, just flatten the curve for the people who are already rich. It's going to be the scandal economically of this bailout package. And then my second prediction is that the Indian market is going to outperform almost every market over the next 9 months, because there's going to be a frenzy of activity and also scrutiny. And finally, people are going to say, well, maybe India's the next China. Look what happened to the Chinese market through the 90s and the aughts. Let's start allocating some capital to Chinese tech stocks. You're going to see the Indian market is going to outperform its peer group.
All right. And what about the Chinese market, since you mentioned them?
You know, that's an interesting...
SEC's getting tough on them? It's interesting. There was some, you know, noise from the head of the SEC. And,
it'll be very interesting. China is such an impressive culture in terms of shareholder value. And it ends up that, to a certain extent, autocratic rule, it can be actually pretty good. An autocracy combined with capitalism can actually be pretty effective. But it'll be interesting because every board meeting I'm on, one of the top issues, we just keep talking about supply chain diversification, which is Latin for how do we get some of our manufacturing capacity out of China somewhere else?
Yeah.
Because whether it's tariffs or an RNA, you know, virus, we're just too dependent upon this one place.
Yeah, we're vulnerable.
Yeah, we're vulnerable.
Absolutely, I agree. That's a really good point. All right, so that is your prediction. Yeah. That is a solid prediction. That is I think mine that the mayor of Las Vegas will lose her job is
Wait,
probably.
Do you know when that election is?
I don't. I think she's not really has many power. She doesn't have any power with the casinos. She doesn't seem to do
Mostly
anything. I think she's just a booster. She's a figurehead, but nonetheless, she should be gone. That was just a really appalling indictment of leadership. That interview, what she was saying about being a control group. Would you like to be a control group, Scott?
Depends what we're talking about.
Why don't you be the control group for us? Why don't you? We will subject you to everything, and then I will have you
At
will have the
point,
placebo, and I will have the actual correct drug. So I will.
Oh, I want to. I want to be the test group. Anyways, go
no,
ahead.
No, you're the control group. You're the control group. In any case,
you're the control freak. I'm the control group.
That is true. All right, Scott. Before we get out of here, you've requested an algebra of happiness moment because you felt we were dour last episode. What? It's a dour time.
Yeah, I got depressed listening to our podcast. So, anyways, my algebra of happiness moment is the following. I love the saying. I'm pretty sure it was Lennon who said that nothing can happen for decades, and then decades can happen in days.
So
if you think about who you are and your reputation, it's the sum of all your actions. And if you think of that being written in pencil on everyone's perception of you, I think the indelible ink that goes over that tracing is how you behave in times like this. And whether it's our recognition of our military personnel, we give them medals in times of crisis, whether it's the most famous presidents or the most honored presidents are the ones who handled themselves well or acquitted themselves well during moments of crisis. I think all of us can take lessons from that. And I've been talking about spending a lot of time talking to companies about how they get off their heels and onto their toes and what do they do during a crisis. But I've been spending a lot of time thinking about, I think this is an extraordinary opportunity to have an outsized return on your efforts in terms of strengthening and repairing relationships. And I think how you approach your relationships during this period will count as much or more than how you approach and repair relationships over the next several years. And that is I think this is an extraordinary opportunity. If for some reason you don't have a great relationship with your parents, I think this is an opportunity for repair. I think that there's people in your life that you want to have stronger relationships with, checking in, establishing stronger bonds. I think this is an extraordinary opportunity to really get off your heels and onto your toes and both repair and strengthen your relationships.
Like that, Scott. Thank you. What are you going to do for me then?
I'm doing it. I'm doing it. I'm making you the most famous podcaster in the world.
Amazon
podcaster
delivery.
Of the year. How did that happen? Yeah. Podcaster of the year. How did that happen?
No. That was mine. Yeah, my singular one.
It wasn't your interview with the non-geared. It wasn't your interview with Chum and Paul Pattaya's assistant you that.
My singular one. Listen to me.
Okay.
Listen to me.
Okay.
I'm waiting for the Amazon delivery of your gift to me now to improve our relationship.
So given at the office here. Oh, my God.
I feel like
anyways,
I
back to my
an Amazon
happiness
delivery.
Moment. This is an extraordinary opportunity.
You're right.
And I think it's also, on the bigger side, I think it's an opportunity for repair. And that is, I think this, if you look at the happiest people in the world, this virus shows us that life is finite. And if you want to be as happy as possible, it's all about one thing. It's about the depth and meaning of relationships. And the key to any long-term relationship is bringing a sense of forgiveness, because you and your friends and your parents and your siblings at some point will screw up. So bring a sense of forgiveness and let's do some massive
that
repair.
That is so sweet. Someone really was asking me what you're like, and I did say, you know, naughty, and I meant vulgar. But actually, what I actually ended up saying is that you're a very soft-hearted man underneath.
It's all an act. It's all an act.
No,
it's all for ratings. It's all to get you podcaster of the year for 2 years in a row.
I think the vulgar part. I think the vulgar part covers over the soft-hearted nature that you have. I agree with you.
I'm like a bear eating an igloo, crunchy on the outside, soft on the inside.
Yes, that's okay. All right. We're gonna
that's not vulgar. You immediately thought that was vulgar.
I don't know what it is. It's just bad. It's just a bad
thing. A bear is eating an igloo.
I hear you. I understand.
And then it gets to the humans on the inside.
That is a joke of 12-year-olds the world over.
No, that's Gary Larson, the Far Side.
I know that, but yes, that's true. That's fair. That's a fair thing. But in any case, Scott, thank you for that moment of beauty in a difficult time. And, you know, we'll try to have a laugh riot on Monday if we can. Anyway, if you don't forget, if you're storing the news.
First Lady of North Korea, the dog.
All right, listen. Don't forget, if there's a story in the news you're curious about and want to hear our opinion on, emails at pivot@voxmedia.com to be featured on the show. Scott, please read us out.
Today's episode was produced by Rebecca Sinanis. Our executive producer is Erica Anderson. Special thanks to Drew Burrows and Rebecca Castro. If you like what you heard, please subscribe. Let's all take a moment and to take advantage of this exceptional opportunity to be generous and forgiving and repair relationships that mean a lot to us. We'll see you next week.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.